right, we're going to give Ian a call here. See what happens. See if we can get him on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
You're on a radio show.
All right, I can almost hear you.
Oh, hang on. Is it too quiet?
I can hear you a little bit. I think it's a little too soft.
A little too soft. Let's just do this. How about now?
That's better.
Better? Good?
Yep.
Doable? All right, I gotta turn off this music here. I can't figure out what I did. How's it going, buddy?
Going all right.
This is our first ever phone-in.
I know. It's a new thing for episode 100.
Yeah. Are you drinking right now, or what are you doing? You're in Arizona.
I'm in Arizona. It's actually, believe it or not, if you had to guess what the weather would be like in Arizona in December, what would you guess?
A million-ish degree,
yeah, a
of degrees. Yeah.
Of degrees. What would you say if I told you that there's snow on the ground right now?
I'd say no.
Well, there it is. I'm looking at it.
That's kind of crazy. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's because I live in the mountains of Arizona.
Uh-huh.
Which, actually, like, where you are in good old Greeley, Colorado.
Yeah, woo!
I'm actually at the same elevation as you guys.
Oh, okay. Well, we had alleged snow. I wasn't actually... Oh, no, it happened the day I flew out from the airport. We had snow. Because I'm smart. This is actually a trend of mine. You remember, you and I took that trip to Germany. It was like a blizzard when we went to the airport.
Oh, yeah.
This has happened to me.
And we had to take that long bus for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And also... Go ahead.
I was trying to remember why we had to take that long bus. Like, Mom just didn't want to drive, or...
I think so. And through the snow. And then the bus was so long because... It picked us up, like, in Loveland, but then it drove further away from the airport for, like, an hour, and then back to the airport. So it was a nuts trip.
That's kind of a dumb route, because we kind of drove past where we, stopped.
Yeah,
like, where we were picked up.
Yeah, we should have just got picked up an hour later.
Yeah, like,
two hours,
in the other direction. Right.
I forgot what I was going to say. It was some... Oh, yeah. There's another time I went to Portland with an old girlfriend, and we drove to the airport. It was a complete blizzard when we were driving to the airport. We missed our flight, in fact.
Oh, wow.
So this has happened to me many times. Oh, you know what? This might sound crazy in your thing, so I apologize, but I have our hour number 5 sort of theme that I have to play.
Okay.
Hang on. I'm trying to do the math, but I'm drunk.
Oh, boy.
If I started at 12:45, we're still in hour 4. We're just starting hour 5.
Right.
Okay, so here is our hour 5 theme. I don't know, can you even hear that?
I can't hear anything.
Okay. Well, it's a CD of learning how to multiply. So
I heard that on episode 99, which you could probably find in the archive.
Yeah, yeah, not very far back at this point.
Okay. It's still in the free archives rather than the paid archives.
Yeah, yeah, not my bonus premium content section.
Which, by the way, when are you going to start having your bonus premium content section?
I don't know. Probably never, because I don't think I can figure out how to do that.
I'm going to say I don't like when podcasts do that.
Yeah, I mean, rarely... The bonus content is usually worse than the regular content, so I don't understand what's bonus about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what pisses me off about it, is, I have that Red Bar show that I love, and I subscribe to their bonus content thing, like, every other year for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, this is all terrible, I don't like it. Well, it's not terrible, that's not true. But it's not as good as the regular show, so it's frustrating, because you're like, shouldn't the pay stuff be the best stuff?
Right, the pay stuff should be I mean, I think that's the hard, you know, that's part of the hard thing if you had something like Red Bar Radio where they produce so much stuff already.
Right.
You know, like, they're probably trying to, are they trying to produce more stuff so they can get paid? I mean,
yeah.
Which, I think that's one thing. The other thing is where they just take their old stuff and they put it in an archive and sort of,
yeah, you know, like Marin does that.
And I think that, you know, the thing that makes it hard is, like, if you want to recommend a show to somebody.
Right, right.
You know, like there's a really good episode, you're like, oh, listen to this, it's going to get you to like this show. And, you know, then they're like, and then someone goes to download it and they have to pay, you know, it's in this, you know, it's in this archive, but you have to pay for it individually, or there's a thing where, like, they have to buy a whole bunch, and like, well, I'm not going to try out a podcast that got to pay $15, so I'll try the newest thing, which is maybe not as good.
Let me ask you this question. You've heard probably every episode of this show, right? Or pretty close?
Pretty close. It's probably some I haven't heard all the way through. But,
yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, well, welcome to everyone. You've probably heard about as much as anyone, though.
You know, since I did produce that racism thing, I had to listen. I went through the archive.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have to play that. I still have that.
Yeah, I think that's a good anniversary thing.
Let me ask you this question, then. Is there a show that you remember that, like, you know, if you were going to tell someone to listen to this show, is there even one that you're like, that's the one I would do, or are they just all whatever?
That's always a tough one, because, and this is my overthinking it again, but that makes for good talk on the show.
Sure.
So I think you want to have something that's either, like, some of the best stuff is not necessarily representative.
Oh, sure.
If that makes sense. Like, what an average show is. Because, like, there was the one with the summer list that I thought was really good.
Yeah, that was fun.
But I think that's not representative of what the show is like normally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. It's probably something, you know, I think if you had to pick an episode, it would probably be either one, you know, trying to pick one of the best ones with you alone or the best one with you and Alec, because that's just the most common. I think that's the most common. Have you figured out if you do the most shows with by yourself or with you and Alec?
No. I mean, he hasn't done a lot since probably 30-ish.
Okay.
He was on a lot and then not as much.
I'm trying to think. He's probably the guest you have on, or the other person you have on the most.
Probably. Speaking of which, so he was signed up. I had him from 3 to 4, but there was some confusion, and I think he's fairly convinced that I'm confused, but I think he's confused. Are you in front of a computer?
Yeah.
Can you pull up the calendar? Is that a possibility? I mean, it's not a big deal.
Like a Google calendar? Because I don't know if I can see if Alec is...
If you can
see
the other...
calendar.
Well, right, but can you pull up... Do you have the link to the calendar that I sent?
Yeah, that's what I'm pulling up right now.
Oh, okay.
That's not what I want.
I wanted to ask you about something, if you can talk about...
Okay,
so,
there,
go ahead.
I can only see... Like, the calendar I can see only shows my appointment. It doesn't show yours.
Oh, interesting.
My Google calendar does. I can check the Facebook one.
Well, yeah, check that link. That's what I'm saying. Go to the link I put on the Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to check that.
Because now I'm concerned, because I'm like, I wonder if anybody else has the right time. But so far, your time was the same. Allison was here at the proper interval.
See, I don't see, like, I can see when there are times, but I can't see who they are.
Okay, is there somebody booked from 3 to 4?
No. It looks like there's someone from 4 to 5.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird.
Because I see there's something, like, I'm assuming the little blanks, you know, because there's, at Saturday, there's someone from 2 to 3.
Yeah.
Someone from 4 to 5, and there's me.
No, okay, so you're looking at the reverse. I think the things you're looking at are the blanks. Because there should be 1 to 2, 3 to 4, 5 to 6, 6 to 7, 7 to 8.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right, so yeah, there is someone, like the blanks, well, if it's got nothing in it, that means someone's taken that spot, so.
Right.
Right, okay, yeah, so there's something, there's a blank space from 3 to 4.
That's what I thought. I have these confirmations, but I don't want to... You know what? Let's just let it go. If he wants to talk about it, we can, but I don't want to, really. I wanted to ask you something. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. No, I was saying go ahead.
You're involved in a play at this point. You have to leave right at 6.
Yeah, I kind of have a...
Is it a play?
Yeah.
Okay. I had a question earlier that I was wise enough to write down so I didn't drunkenly forget. Are there any plays that you would say are like Die Hard?
Like Die Hard?
In
action-packed, or...
Well, I mean more like there's a takeover and there's one man who can stop it.
No. No.
Everyone says Shakespeare's so great, but he never did a Die Hard thing, did he?
You know, there's something that's close, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But not really. Like, let's see how close this is to Die Hard, all right?
Yeah.
We'll add it up. Okay?
This better not be Shakespeare.
Well, it is, but I'm trying to get as close as I can to see if it has anything we could make into Die Hard.
I'm sure I'll be disappointed, but go ahead.
All right. Do you even want me to tell you the title? Because I think the title's like a minus 1,000.
Probably not. We'll end with all the right. title.
The title is called Coralinus.
Or just do it. Okay. So it's like Coraline.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so with table...
That sounds
forward,
like a really shitty electric car, but go ahead.
All right. So basically what happens is Coralinus is, there's a guy who's a general, right? And he hates poor people.
Corey Matthews.
General Corey. Well, it's like he's got a long, complicated name, and then he goes off to war with this other guy.
Yeah.
Who lives in a sort of faraway village.
Uh-huh. He's in a village far away.
Now, here's the thing, you know, and I can tell, and so he goes to the village, he's almost captured this other village leader guy, but just sort of narrowly misses him, gets wounded, comes back. He's supposed to get this sort of promotion, this big honor, but like all the regular people sort of rise up and say he's, you know, a douche.
Okay.
And then he goes out and be the douche in public.
Okay.
Gets exiled from the city.
Okay.
You know, for being, you know, for all of his nastiness towards the regular people.
For his doucheness,
Goes and allies himself with the village leader.
Okay.
Like the guy he formerly fought to come back and try to take over Rome.
Okay.
They surrender and take part of it, and then, predictably the village leader who hated him before just murders him straight out.
Sure.
So, here's the thing that could make it like Die Hard, and that's something that I saw, is that on Netflix Instant, for those of you who have it.
Yeah, everyone but me.
Someone did an update of this play, like, you know, in the way where they did that Romeo plus Juliet thing.
Mm-hmm.
They did that with Coralinus, and it's got Ralph Fiennes and Gerard Butler.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever the fuck his name is.
I think his name is 300.
Yeah, that, like, because I'm trying to think of something that he was in that was also good and not 300.
Let's see, I feel like oh no, that's Clive Owen. No, he's been in nothing. I thought I had something, but I was thinking of Clive Owen.
And this is the kind of thing where it's really goofy because he had, like, I almost didn't watch it, but, like, you watch this and it's one of those, like, what is happening kind of things. Like, when you have the Shakespearean dialogue, it already seems a little odd. Like, when that's the least odd thing in the movie, that's a problem.
Yeah, when you don't even notice that because you're like, what the hell is the rest of this?
Well, there's a bizarre choices of accents.
Oh.
Like, no one, you know, everyone else sort of has a weird British-y accent.
Right.
You know, which is sort of the dumb American version of foreign.
Right. Whenever it's like, an old-timey, it doesn't matter where it takes place. If they're speaking English, they do an English accent.
This is where it gets weird. It's because it's the word, like, they did an update, like a contemporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in other words, these guys are fighting a war with, like, you know, machine guns.
Right.
Like, rifles and everything else. And they don't change any of the dialogue that talks about fighting with a sword, you know?
Ah, so they, yeah.
And you're like,
that, I didn't even think, like yeah. Have at thee, and then he shoots him.
Right, a lot of stuff doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, where it's like, you'll die by my sword, and it's like, no one has a sword here.
Yeah, couldn't they just change it to steel or something, and then you'd be like, that could be a sword or a gun.
Yeah, even then you're kind of like, and that's the thing where you don't really get, like, how hard it is to sort of, and because they have to have a confrontation between the village leader and sort of Corey.
Of course. Corey.
It becomes really, like, it makes no sense, because they both come in,
yeah.
They both have rifles,
yeah.
And in both cases, they both really hate each other,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And in both cases, if the other one is dead, it's, like, huge benefit. Like,
right.
Huge benefit. You know, right. Like, the Jared kills Corey, his village is safe.
Yeah.
Corey kills Jared, he gets all this glory. So it's, right. Like, huge benefit. They hate each other and huge benefit for winning. So they both have rifles.
Yeah.
They're both all walking in sort of Mexican standoff style. What do you think happens?
They shoot each other at the exact same time, and the bullets hit each other in midair.
Oh, no. This is even
one
more.
Guy tapes the rifle to his back with Christmas stuff.
Right. So this is a sequence that could become Die Hard, but you know what happens?
What?
This squad of guys, in both cases...
Mm-hmm.
They walk up, both of them hand each other, like they hand their squad, you know, their rifles.
Right.
And they decide they're kind of going to have a knife fight instead.
Okay. So they're like, we're going to all agree to fight with knives.
Right.
Okay. That's stupid.
Well, it's just like, we need to just have this not end in 40 seconds, you know, in 30 seconds.
Yeah, we need to have a movie scene.
Right, but it makes no sense, like, why would you want to... And it's also because, like, finally the dialogue about stabbing someone makes more sense.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
But it's sort of like, you have a squad of guys, and then, like, once the fight is over,
uh-huh.
The squad just sort of drags the leader, sort of drags Corey away,
uh-huh.
And no one shoots anyone after that.
Oh, okay, once the leader's gone, they're like, we're done.
Yep, they're like, okay, we're done.
You know what, though? I feel like that's realistic, because I think about these action movies, and they'll have a bunch of henchmen and a bad guy, right? A bad boss. And, you know, the boss gets killed, and if I was one of the henchmen, the second the boss died, I think I'd be like, all right, well, I'm not getting paid.
Right.
My henching is done. I may try to escape, but my desire to kill John McClane has disappeared. I don't give a fuck about that guy. You know, while he was dropping him off the building, I'd be like, this is a good chance to run.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is, like, it makes sense on one side, because, like, all of Corey's troops are like, hey, we're getting killed, let's just go home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, we must press forward, but the thing, it seems weird in a modern context, because these guys are so much, like, professional soldiers and
right.
military-looking guys. You know, they're not like, oh, wait, we're just farmers.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No,
like,
I get it.
We don't really want to be here.
I totally get it.
It's the kind of thing, like, where all of those updated Shakespeare things can be more weird than, even, like, you know, because we all had to see those Romeo and Juliet things in high school. Right?
Yeah, the one where the chick got topless.
Which is awesome.
I never saw it because they fast-forwarded it, which I was excited because the whole time I knew she got topless. And I was like, she looks like she has nice cans. They were ready to make her topless.
I guess that's the thing I don't get, where it's like they're so into teaching, even though I'm kind of a Shakespeare person, like, look, you should teach it as it is. You know, like,
yeah,
not be like, oh, you know, and it's the kind of thing where they had sex in a context where they were married. And so kind of like, if some religious fundamentalist person objects to that, you're like, look, okay, you know, you get to go home.
I gotta believe, though, there's gotta be so many junior high teachers out there who are like, why in the hell do they have to show this topless girl for 10 seconds in this movie? This is the perfect movie for me to show to kill 4 hours of a class, but they just had to have this topless babe in there, you know, which is not in the plays, as I recall, a topless woman. So
there's no reason you couldn't do a topless woman. I mean,
no, I just mean, that's the, That version, for whatever reason, seems to be the one that they're in love with enough that they show it despite the toplessness, and they have to, like, no. I'm sure there are English teachers out there who've retired 10 years ago who are like, oh yeah, that happens at 2 hours and 4 minutes to 2 hours and 4 minutes 15 seconds.
You know, and the thing is, the English teachers show it because if you showed that one with, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio. And,
yeah, I mean, you can't show that.
You can't show that, but it also makes no, you know, it makes no sense because, again, they're talking about swords all the time, but they're clearly holding guns.
Yeah.
Also, it's just weird to see John Leguizamo doing Shakespeare.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that guy. I heard it. I have a really important game. Don't let me forget.
Okay.
I heard an interview with him, you know, right before he was going to do Spawn, and it made me laugh because I was thinking, you know what a good sign of a movie not being really great is? Like an action-type movie or a comic book movie? When it comes out, they spend an inordinate amount of time talking to the actors about what they're wearing or how long it took them to get in the makeup. You know what I mean? That's like 90% of the interviews is like, he spent 6 hours putting makeup on. And that's really all that he had to say about the movie, and also that the guy who was Spawn was really good at martial arts. And you're like, well, so far I haven't heard anything that's convinced me to watch this film. It's good thing to watch for if you're going to go see Avatar, and they're like, it took 1 million computers 100 hours to render it. It's like, well, okay. Plot-wise, that doesn't do a lot for me.
I mean, it's the kind of thing, like, where there's some movies where you have that position already done for you, where it's the, hey, you know what this is? Star Trek. Or, this is Batman.
Sure.
You don't really have to sell it beyond that. You're like, oh, I'm going to go see this. Or, you know, I don't really like Star Trek, but we'll see.
I just spent about an hour talking about Batman and Robin to myself. I wonder if, because you saw that in the theater, I remember, because you advised me to not go, and whatever you said convinced me to not go. Do you have recollection of seeing that movie in the theater and what your reaction was at that time? I mean, you would have been like 15 or something. It was pretty young.
Oh, you know, it's the kind of thing where I went, you know, because back in the day, it's worth reminding people that about 15 years ago, there wasn't really much internet around, you know?
Well, yeah, you didn't really know what a movie was beyond the trailer, and then you kind of had to chance it.
The poster, and then you're like, and I remembered, like, seeing Batman Forever, and I kind of thought, okay, you know, I didn't really like Batman Forever, but you're like, oh, all right.
That's what I was like, you know, it started going off the rails, but it didn't completely lose the track. So it was not a franchise killer. It just didn't advance anything.
I mean, there's a weird thing that it actually, a critic I listened to had talked about that it almost was a franchise killer.
Well, it was because I think it happened, and then Joel Schumacher was like, they loved it, I'm going to give them even more of the same. But what I mean is if they had done Batman Forever and then decided not to do another, I don't think we would blame Batman Forever and say that movie fucking destroyed it.
No, Batman and Robin, like that same, you know, it's kind of a weird thing because it was so bad that it was allowed, like, the new stuff was allowed to be dark because someone's like, you know what happens?
Yeah, like, see what happens when we go the other way?
Because the first two, like, when you watch Batman Returns, like, if you watch it again, you realize how sort of weird and scary it is for something that's sort of ostensibly directed at kids.
I just was talking about how that movie is like kind of great because it's so weird and it's so kind of off, and like it's kind of Tim Burton, what he does, I think, right, where it's like when he makes it just weird enough that you're a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think that makes a good Batman movie, and I remember that as a kid, but like when you see like someone's trying to make a toy empire or like a Happy Meal out of that, you're like, you can't, you know. And so the studio gives it to, but Batman and Robin, I remember going in and seeing this.
Yep.
And I remember like, all right, whenever I've seen, I think, except for the first Batman.
Yeah.
the very first one, the Michael Keaton one. I've seen them all in the theater.
Right.
You know, I didn't see The Dark Knight in the theater, but that's a different thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, every time when you see it in the theater and Batman shows up, you're always excited.
Yeah, the first reveal of Batman, you're like, fucking A.
Even like in something like The Dark Knight where it takes a little while, or The Dark Knight Rises where it's like, oh, wow, when is Batman finally going to show up? But when he shows up, you're like, movie's starting.
I remember I was saying how like even Batman Forever, which is the second worst, I mean, he shows up at the beginning and there's this whole bank heist thing and he does have the nipples. But even then, it starts out in such a way that you're like, this could be all right. I'm not sure. You're unsure, but the Batman reveal is probably still the best part of the movie.
Yeah, well, it's the part where you're like, okay, you know, this cannot be, like, you're like, and I give sort of the credit to Batman Forever where they just really don't mess around with, like, establishing the story or anything else.
Yeah,
just like,
he just swoops in. He's Batman from the very first frame, yeah.
You're like, and then when you have a third in this series, you're like, you know, everyone knows who this is. Everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah.
But the fourth one was the only one where Batman showed up, and then George Clooney started talking, and you go, oh.
You're like, what the hell is this? Yeah, it was like having a rapey uncle in a Batman suit at a party. He was the first Batman where he was on screen, and even as a child, I guess it was 14 or something, but you see him talking and you're thinking, like, this is like when someone dresses up in the exact Batman costume and is at a costume party. Just something about the way he's standing, I don't buy it for a second.
Well, it's the kind of thing that you almost think, like, for one thing I noticed is that he's the only Batman who doesn't have a Batman voice.
Yeah, he uses his exact Bruce Wayne voice. That's true.
Like, he's just talking, and everyone else like has a Batman voice or something.
Yeah,
and you kind of think, oh, you know, the Batman voice like is an effort, you know. And even in the third one, where you're like, okay, this person is encountering like, you know, that Nicole Kidman in two different scenarios.
Yeah, has to do it.
You kind of have to, but it makes sense. Like, someone's not just, you know, and when you have a guy like Bruce Wayne who probably talks a lot in public, you'd have a weird voice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or, like, you have something. And as much as it's kind of goofy, it feels like something that, like, okay, it makes sense in the logic of the movie, even if it's not always executed well.
You know what? You're totally right, because here's the thing. I think that's part of what I was feeling about the costume thing. Because, like, when someone's dressed up in a costume and they look, like, exactly like Optimus Prime, and then you say, hey, buddy, that's a great costume. And he's like, oh, thanks. You're like, that just killed it.
Yeah, and it's like, at that point, you know, but that's just, you're dealing with them at a costume party, and you're like, that's a cool costume. But then you're like, oh, no. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger comes out, and it's,
oh, no.
Like, so, where you sort of see that, and you're like, he doesn't even have, like, a full helmet.
I know, he looked like an idiot. He was the worst.
Like, his costume doesn't make any sense. Like, he's supposed to be a guy who can't survive without Sub-Zero, you know, like a Sub-Zero suit, but his head is totally open.
Yeah, and they always say, they're like, you know, your temperature is always leaking out through your head. So I would think if someone was inversed and they were cold all the time, wouldn't you also want to wear insulation on your head so the heat was not getting in? Is that, I don't know how this works, but I would think if the reverse was true, you know, and you're trying to keep the cold next to your body, that you would not want to wear no hat.
Well, it seems also like heat rises, and that's all that stuff of like, yeah, if you're going to protect, and also like if you have something that's basically, you know, a battle suit of some kind.
Yeah.
You know, like when you think about it, like if you're going to have some kind of he's the only one.
You're like, I don't need to cover my head.
Right, he's the only one in all the movies, though, in fairness, like, I think one of the only ones who has, you know, some kind of fighting outfit.
You know what, you're totally right, and I never thought about that, but you know who's good is, like, X-Men villains, like Magneto and Juggernaut? They're always, like, their helmet looks retarded, but they're like, fuck that shit, like, this is my head. If my head gets fucked, I'm fucked. Anything else I could probably do without. But the head's kind of a problem, a deal breaker.
Even in the X-Men movie, they have a good explanation of why he's got the helmet. Like, then Charles Xavier can't read his mind.
Well, yeah, like, but even then, it's like if you're going to fight Wolverine and you could have helmet or no helmet, you probably should go helmet.
Right. And I mean, the other Batman villains, like Penguin is not really a guy, you know, it's not really a guy who gets into fist fights. The Joker is not really a guy who gets into fist fights.
Right.
Poison Ivy in that same movie doesn't really get into fist fights.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the way she operates. So it makes sense that maybe they wouldn't, you know, it would make sense for Poison Ivy not to have a helmet because she's, you know, supposed to be. She was the only one in that movie who almost made sense.
I guess.
You know, like, not good. I'm not going to say she was good, but it felt like, okay, I kind of get where this character is going.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could understand from her perspective, being on the set and the choices she made, you're like, well, she was, whatever.
Which, I think it's the kind of thing where she was the only one who sort of played, like, she fit, you know, when I've watched it since, she almost fit everything, because it's sort of like she played it as if it was, you know, the 60s Batman TV show.
Yeah, she was very campy. She sounded like the Catwoman, where she's like, oh, Batman, you know, like a drag queen almost.
Right, but she would seem to be the only one who, like, made where that fit, you know, where she could do, like, she could pull that off as an actress.
Yeah.
I don't think it was good.
No.
But I feel like that's the only thing that, and then, you know, Bane is a big, dumb idiot, where you're like, why is he here?
Yeah, to and punch.
It was hard not to laugh
to
when they have these punching, but also when he has to put the bombs down.
I knew you were going to bring that up, because ever since you've seen that, this is always like one of your favorite details. But go, please. He's setting these little bombs that are shaped like icicles along this walkway.
And even as a 15-year-old, I was laughing at this, because it was just so awful. It was just, you would go, bomb.
Yeah, and then set a bomb down, and then he'd walk 3 feet, and then say,
right,
bomb, and put a... I mean, he was retarded, for sure.
And it was the kind of
retarded
thing where, like, I don't... Was he trying to... I think he did that to inform the audience of what he was doing.
Yeah, to be fair to him, I mean, they were just looked like big icicles, which I guess was probably a Mr. Freeze thing, but you're like, I thought he was working for Poison Ivy, and why would you shape your bombs like icicles? That doesn't make sense. You could easily do that cheesy, like, alarm clock with dynamite thing and some wires, and we wouldn't have to. You're right. I bet that was, like, additional looped dialogue, where they're like, I don't think it's clear what he's doing, so let's have him say bomb as he sets each bomb.
And then you're just, It's explaining to the audience what the hell is happening.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, and that's the thing, like, if you had a little package and you clicked, like, a little blinking green light.
Yeah.
The audience, not everyone, but the audience for that movie would get what's going on. Like, if you had a little brown package, you know, looks like a little plastic explosive.
Yeah.
And also, you have a giant icicle, and also it seemed dumb, like, you have a giant icicle, like, here's where the bomb is.
Well, this is another thing that he fucked up, that Joel Schumacher. Like, for some reason, everything had to be themed. You know what I mean? If you're Mr. Freeze, and you make a bomb, it's definitely going to be icicle-shaped. You know, or if you have a lair, it's going to be the old ice cream factory. You know, it's not going to be...
Poison Ivy has this weird plant greenhouse thing.
Yeah, I mean, they can't... They have, you know, and they drive a car, and it's like a Freeze-mobile. You know, or an ice cream truck or something. You know what I mean? There's nothing. Everything's very on message. They're very concerned about maintaining their brand as Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that if you were to make, I think what Joel Schumacher did in that film was he made a theatrical production of
he
Batman.
He made Batman Live.
That happened to be still.
Yeah.
Yeah, which.
Batman on Ice, literally. Batman on Ice is what that was. It's like when you go to Six Flags and see the Batman Live. That's exactly what it's like. Sparks everywhere. You know, people doing a lot of unnecessary flips and stuff like that.
Where it's just like, oh. But I mean, it's the kind of thing that I think, like, you know, Batman Forever was kind of like that too.
Yeah.
But then you have Alicia Silverstone for some reason.
You know
which is that...
Yeah.
When you look at her, you don't think, okay, this is a person who is super athletic. You know, and I'm not going to go into the that she's fat thing, but it's that she does not look like an athlete.
Right.
You know, like someone who would be able to punch someone or jump off of something. And in fairness, like George Clooney doesn't really. Chris O'Donnell, all right.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, they just picked her because she was the it girl. I mean, if it had been 10 years before that, it would have been Shannon Doherty. You know what I mean?
Right. They just picked somebody who was there. They picked someone who was blonde. And then they're like, all right, we have, you know, we have. And I think it's that they had Poison Ivy in the movie. They didn't want Joel Schumacher's thing, didn't want to have something, you know, Batman to punch Poison Ivy.
Oh, yeah. No, that's 100% what happened. Because they're like, well, you have to face them off because then. He doesn't have to punch a woman, which is ridiculous. I don't want to run out of time before we have time to play this game, because I think you're really going to enjoy this game.
Okay.
So, let's change gears. But thank you for telling me about Batman and Robin.
Mom!
So, here's the deal.
Mom!
I was listening to a very old piece of radio and heard an interview with one Margaret Cho, who we're all very familiar with.
Mom and I and you went to see Margaret Cho.
Yeah, we saw her. I think we got her tickets, my mom tickets, to see her because we thought she'd enjoy that, which I think she did. She had an opener who was just basically his comedy was like, I'm super gay, and he was terrible. But Margaret Cho was fine. But here's the deal. I heard an interview with her, and we all know her as a stand-up. However, few remember that she also played a very small role in the motion picture Face Off as like John Travolta's sort of third hand woman. You know, she was like an FBI agent. She was the agent Scully.
Oh, right.
So I hear this interview with her, and this interview is like probably right after filming on Face Off had wrapped. So it's going to come out like in 6 months, let's say. So the person interviewing her is like, so what have you been working on lately? And she's like, I've been working on this big action flick called Face Off, starring Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. At which point the interviewer said, what's this about? What's this movie about? Now, I got very excited at this point because I'm sitting there thinking, I'm about to hear someone explain Face Off in plain language And this is in a time when Face-Off does not exist as a thing. Like, today, we all sort of know what Face-Off is and accept it for all its madness.
Right.
At this time, however, if you said Face-Off to someone, that meant nothing. You know, they're like, is this a hockey movie? So, my challenge to you is I would like you to pretend you're Margaret Cho, and I'm hosting this interview. I'm going to ask you about... to basically summarize this movie for me, and you need to keep in mind two things. A, I have no familiarity with any of the basics of Face Off other than knowing vaguely who Nicolas Cage and John Travolta are. B, that you are in this movie, so you have to be kind to it. You can't pretend it's ridiculous. At this time, she probably didn't think it was completely ridiculous, right?
Okay.
So
I have to sell this movie without spoiling it?
Sell it without, we'll just do it. So, you're in a movie called Face Off with Nick Cage and John Travolta. What are the beats? Kind of tell me, you know, what's the hook? What's the movie? What is this?
Well, it starts off with John Travolta, and he's kind of a straight-laced FBI agent, family man.
Okay.
Guy. All right. And his son is killed by this sort of, I guess, you know, he's this terrorist guy.
Yeah.
And played by Nicolas Cage.
Okay.
And, you know, this terrorist, you know, Nicolas Cage is really great in this film because, I mean, it just requires him to be just off the wall, kind of kooky and crazy and weird. So I think that's what he does really well.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah. But, like, take that times a million, you know. So basically, John Travolta eventually catches Nicolas Cage
okay.
and puts him in a coma.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
But
with you,
Nicolas Cage's brother is in this weird prison.
Okay.
Okay. Like they caught him. They caught them both, and like they put Nicolas Cage in a coma, and the brother goes to prison.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
The brother is not talking about a very big bomb plot that they have. Mm-hmm. All right. They've planted a very big bomb somewhere in the city of Los Angeles.
Hold on. Surely, at this point, I mean, are you telling me we're like an hour into the movie at this point, right? I mean...
Oh, no, no. This is like in the first 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
This is pretty early on. This moves fast.
Okay.
Yeah. This is a fast-paced thing, so I think it's good because, you know, the audience is going to keep, you know, they'll keep up.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Basically, in order to get the, you know, the brother isn't going to talk to anybody.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's just going to climb up about this bomb.
Okay.
But they know he would talk to his brother.
Right.
So what they do to John Travolta's character is they're going to have John Travolta and Nicolas Cage switch places.
Okay.
Right.
Like a Freaky Friday kind of thing?
Well, yeah, but with science. Because what they're going to do is they're going to take, the idea is they take Nicolas Cage's face and put it on John Travolta's head. Right?
Like a mask?
Yeah, kind of like a mask.
And so they just, like, staple it on John Travolta's head.
They have lasers to sort of, you know.
They use laser. Okay. So they put it on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And what about, I mean, his body? Doesn't he know? I mean.
Well, I mean, in the logic of the movie, they kind of talk about how they're pretty similar in height and, you know, weight and everything else. And
little suspension, that's fine.
Yeah, they're not that far off. So it's the kind of thing that, and plus, you know, it's the kind of thing that, like, if, you know, Nicolas Cage's character's been in a coma for a while, he's going to come out and look a little weird, you know?
Okay. Yeah, so his face might be a little mashed or something.
His face is a little mashed, yeah, and they sort of cut his hair down and, you know, make everything look the same. So they send John Travolta into the prison, you know, to the brother.
Right.
What happens is Nicolas Cage wakes up.
Okay.
Right? And
while John Travolta is in the prison with the brother.
Right, was in the prison with the brother.
Uh-huh.
And so now, you know, now Nicolas Cage has, you know, holds the doctors hostage and takes John Travolta's face, forces the doctors to sort of put his face.
Oh, okay. So they remove John Travolta's face.
Right.
And when you say face, I mean they like slice the front off his head and then they put Nicolas Cage's face on and then John Travolta's face is just sort of like in a drawer somewhere.
It's actually in this sort of floating solution because they want to, John Travolta's eventually going to go back and, you know, get everything back to normal.
Okay. Why not? But, of course.
Well, what happens is since Nicolas Cage has broken out of now John Travolta, he's got all of John Travolta's FBI sort of access and powers and family and stuff. And so Nicolas Cage as the John Travolta has to stop John Travolta as Nicolas Cage.
Okay.
From sort of, you know, messing up his family and other terrorist plots and all kinds of stuff.
All right. I think you've won the game. I think that's as close as it gets.
I think it's the kind of thing where I have to reveal a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you have to say, it sounds like a lot, but really, that's like the first half hour. The movie really starts when you have them swapped and the bad guy's fucking up the good guy's life, right? I mean.
Yeah, where you have John Travolta sort of running around, molesting, you know, his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, Nicolas Cage has to convince everyone that he's John Travolta. I mean, you can see why I hope that was a moment for me when he asked the question, that very short pause between asking the question and her beginning to answer was I was so overjoyed, you know?
I was waiting. I think it's also the kind of thing that when something is that new, you couldn't reveal all of those details.
Of course.
But I mean,
you did a yeoman's job. You know, what could you? What can you do? It's a tough question.
Well, it's the kind of thing of like even when they explain it in the film.
Yeah.
Like it's so like they had Nicolas Cage do it as sort of, you know, John Travolta, where it's the sort of insane drug moment.
Yeah.
The only way it makes sense. It's like, I'm going to take his face off.
Yeah.
And then it makes sense in the context of that film where you're like, oh.
Yeah, I'm going to need to look up the trailer and see exactly what they did. Because I, you know, they must have summed that up somehow in about 2 minutes.
I think, like, you just sort of show action sequences.
Yeah, that's true. Like, it was a John Woo movie, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you have to have the sort of slow motion walking away with, like, doves behind the good guy.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a signature of, you know, or, like, if, since it is a John Woo movie, you have to have somebody diving and shooting two guns at once.
Yeah.
Which, does your tactical shooting class, the one with the duct tape, does it have you shoot two guns while diving?
I don't know, but I did that at the shooting range. I didn't dive, but I shot two guns at the shooting range. It's actually, okay. You know what? I think it's not a good, I think it's, you're better off shooting one gun at a time. Because what you don't think about is you're trying to shoot this target that's dead ahead of you, right? Like, look at the wall straight in front of you. And then in order to hit them with the same guns, you sort of have to, like, aim both guns inwards a little bit, and it's very awkward. So I think you're better off with one. I don't think the, you know, having the double bullet. And also, it's extremely hard to shoot two guns in a direction on purpose at the same time. Like, to focus on that,
This is kind of like that exact thing is kind of why, you know, semi-automatic and machine guns were invented.
I think so. You know, to create a storm of bullets. Yeah.
Because, like, you could create a swarm of bullets and kind of have them all go the same. Because if you're trying to shoot two guns, like, do you think it would be easier? This is my hypothetical.
Uh-huh.
All right? Do you think it would be too easier if you had sort of, like, imagine you sort of put your arms at a 90-degree angle.
Okay.
Right? So that way you had something on your, like, a target to your left and a target to your right.
Right. Okay.
You're sort of shooting across.
I look like Jesus from the front.
Not 100. You don't have your arms all the way splayed out, but you're kind of making a right angle from above. Right angle.
So, like, yeah, one like going right directly in front of me, one directly to my right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like, yeah. So you imagine that, right?
Uh-huh.
You have to hit targets that are sort of in front of your hands.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that would be easier to hit both targets if they were sort of splayed out like that? Or if you had something directly in front of you and you had to hit them with both?
I mean, I think it's... Part of the problem is the, you know, arms. You have arms. But part of the problem, too, is just like, it's like if you went to a batting cage, but instead of hitting a ball, you had a bat in each hand and a ball coming on each side of you, and you had to hit them both, you know, even at the same time. It's, like, very difficult. And, like, pulling the triggers at the same time, you know, you're like, well, do I pull them both at the same time, or do I go alternate? You know what I mean? I went alternate because I think that seemed like the right thing to do morally. But, I mean, was it... I don't know if that's effective. I think that the two-gun thing is for action movies. I don't think that's a really good idea. Let's put it this way. If I was in a die-hard scenario, now having tried to shoot two guns at the same time, not that I'm an experienced shooter, but if I had two guns and I was like about to run into a room and there were two guys, I would just have the one gun. And just try and hit one and then the other. I don't think I would try and go for both at once, because I think if I tried to hit one, I could probably hit one, and then maybe if I get lucky, I'll hit the second one. But if I try to shoot both, I'll probably miss both.
Let me give you... I think I have my scenario, right?
Yeah.
Where maybe the two guns would work.
Okay.
It also involves the Metal Gear bandana infinite ammo.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, is if you had two guns, you could never... Like, two pistols, you'd have to reload...
Yeah, which is impossible, yeah, because you have to, like, set one down on a table, and
And then reload it and everything else, but if you were just doing, like, one of those things, like, you were just putting down, like, covering fire for somebody, or you just need to spray a whole bunch of bullets...
Sure.
...toward...
Okay.
...a direction...
Yeah.
...you know, Which, again, you could probably do just as effectively with, you know, you probably wouldn't do that with a handgun.
Yeah, but, right.
You know, but even then, like, someone would figure out, oh, he's just shooting nothing.
Yeah,
you know, he's not going to hit us, let's just get it, you know?
Right.
So even that's the only thing I could think of is, like, if you just had two, if that's all you had and you had to provide covering fire.
Yeah.
You know, so someone can run away and you're just kind of creating havoc in a general direction.
Right. Right.
But I wouldn't want to run underneath that because your bullets are just going everywhere.
It just, yeah, the two gun thing. No.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah.
So we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I did want to give you an advice question, just because that's, you know, one of our standard things on this show is advice.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a book of questions, and I'll just ask you one if that sounds all right.
All right.
Here we go. Dear Ian, this year I will be turning 27, which, as we all know, is the ripest age for suicide. Several of my friends have gone before me to the age of 27, not suicide, and my time is fast approaching. I can't help but feel despair. Do you have any advice on how to cope with the post-27 suicide-free life-after-death lifestyle? Wendy from Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, Wendy, first of all, your question is very confusing.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure, like, are you trying to ask, the easier way to ask that is, how do you cope with being 27?
Right.
Or, like, 27 in a couple of days.
Yeah.
You know, because here's the thing, Wendy, I want you to think about it this way. Once you turn 27, like, once that hour passes, you know, that hour you were born,
mm-hmm.
you know, 27 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you're now no longer 27. You're, like, 27 in a couple hours, and you're just 27 in a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're not really 27 anymore. So, really, you don't have to make it a year. You just have to make it, like, a day.
Right.
And once you're 27 in a day, you're not really 27 anymore. So,
you're out of the...
I got that...
Yeah.
You're out of the wilderness right there. You're in your post-27. You know, so you just have to keep the gun out of your mouth, like, in the hour, and you'll be hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that 27 is not that different from 26,
yeah,
which is also not that different from 28. So, you know, I think you just have to sort of say people kill themselves around 27. But I don't know. Why do you think people kill themselves around the age of 27? Do you think it's just that, like, they've hit their late 20s at that point?
Yeah. I think it's, well, I could speak to myself personally why I would say I was, you know, when I had those thoughts. I mean, I think the late 20s are a pretty tough time because I think that, I was just talking about this the other day. It's a weird time because I think it's the time in your life when there's the biggest disparity between you and other people of your age cohort. When you're 27... You know people who live at home and are finishing their undergrad, and you know people who have moved out and have two kids and a wife and are working full-time, you know, and everything in the spectrum. And so it's weird because I think that most times when you're 21, you and your friends are all kind of, and people you know just in general, are all kind of in the same place. You know what I mean? As far as, you know, whoever you know who's the most successful and the least successful really aren't that different. And you're still like, I'm 21. That's very young. There's a lot of potential. But
the people who are the most successful at 21 are probably people with some, like, wealthy parents or, you know.
It's no surprise,
Right.
Well, and, you know, if someone's like a millionaire when they're 21, it's like a Mark Zuckerberg and everyone's like, well, it's a big deal because he's 21. No one's a... But... As you get older, I think that, you know, once you're 27-ish and you get in your late 20s, I think you start thinking a little bit about, like, okay, well, here's my life path. Is this what I want? You know what I mean? And a lot of people are probably a lot of people who at 27, they're at, you know, 35, their lives are still very different. But I think it feels like you might be starting to get into whatever your thing is, you're there, kind of.
Right. I guess I see it sort of differently, where it's that I agree with you completely that 27 feels really divergent.
Yeah.
In the way that, like, almost in a weird way that, like, 19 feels really divergent, like the ones who go to college and the ones who don't, and you're like,
yeah,
well, you know, the ones who go far away, the ones who stay in the college in town,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like that. But honestly, I mean, you know, people go to Louisiana to college, and people who stay in their home state, I mean, they're having a pretty similar experience, in my opinion.
I mean, I would say, like, if they go in their home state, I'd probably agree with you. But, like, the ones who are going in their hometown, like, the same place they grew up. I agree it's not a huge gap, but there's still a gap. Like, it feels more like a gap than it is.
Yeah, but it's not, like, a depressing gap, because you're 19, I mean, and you're going to when you're 19 and you go to college in your hometown, it just kind of feels like high school, too. And when you go somewhere else, I mean, I think there's an initial sort of like, oh, I'm out on my own. But then you quickly realize, like, it's pretty much the same, except I live here.
Right. Right. I think that's true. I think also, like, that late 20s time, where a lot of those unrealistic ideas you had in your early 20s kind of come to fruition. As well, like, when you sort of think at 20, like, when you get out of college or whatever, and you're 21, you think, by 27, I'm going to be a fully-fledged adult. And you're like, probably not.
I think you start to I think it's a stock-taking time, and that's the real... Any time in your life, you know, it's like a midlife crisis. Why do they have midlife crisis? I think that's because, you know, when you're 27, you start to, I think, panic a little bit about your life course. And then when you're like 40, you start to sort of say, like, I had these dreams that I have not done. Mm-hmm. Am I ever going to do this? Should I give up on them? You know?
Yeah, at 27 is that stock-taking time where you're like, okay. That's also the kind of thing where you're big... You know, you probably at 27, you've probably had some stuff that failed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, you've had a relationship that failed. You had a college experience where you didn't get the grades you wanted.
Yeah, of course.
So you kind of have all those things. Yeah. You know, you have that failure piling up.
Yeah.
And also, like, at 27, even though, like, your lives are very divergent, the common thing is that, like, a lot of stuff is a lot harder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, you're not
making friends, doing things. I mean, yeah.
Like, maintaining some kind of friends or lifestyle or whatever else.
Totally. Totally.
But that's really coming to a head. And, you know, like, I was actually talking with a helpful Snowgram not too long ago.
Sure.
Our grandmother. Because when I turned 30, she talked about how 30 was sort of the worst year for her. But then she's like, after 31, she was fine.
Yeah.
And I think it's that we've talked about 30, you know, we talked about it in another show, but it's that 30 is where you start to think that your youth is pretty much over.
Right.
You know, like, you're still not old, but you're not really young anymore either, you know?
You know what it is, I think, honestly, I mean, to summarize, and then we probably better get going, but my quick summary would be, you know, when you're young, everything is about what you could do. When you're 27... ish is, I think, the first time in your life when you start to take stock and start to become a little bit more about the things you think you'll never do.
And the things you haven't, the things you have done or haven't done.
Well, yeah, and the haven't becomes to be more about you haven't done. It's less about, I haven't done this, but I would love to. It's more about, like, I have not done this and maybe never will.
Right. Or, like, you start to see that the thing you want to do is really, really hard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you're like...
Oh, yeah, it's part of it's realistic. I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the kind of thing, or it's this thing where you say, oh, I went to school for something, and it turns out that's not what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, what am I going to do? Or, you know, bigger in my circle, you know, people that I sort of know tangentially, it's like, oh, I want my relationship with this person.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now I'm at a point where I kind of want to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a time of change and regret. Well, on that note...
Yeah. Change and regret. Oh, before you let me go, I saw Elias is on Facebook, and someone should message him as to where your house is.
Oh, I didn't even think... Okay, I will do that, because he's supposed to be here now.
Okay.
But I will do that, and then, yeah. So I better let you go, but thanks for the call in. It was a pleasure.
No problem. Happy 100. Hopefully, you do have Helpful Snow Mom coming, right?
Not tonight, no. But another time.
Okay.
You know what? I didn't need her lost in this shuffle, you know?
I see.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right.
We'll see you soon.
Too. Okay.
You may tire of me as our December sun is setting, 'cause I'm not who I used to be. No longer easy on the eyes, but these wrinkles masterfully disguise the youthful boy below, who turned your way and saw something he was not looking for, both the beginning and an end. But now he lives inside someone he does not recognize when he catches his reflection on accident. Like brothers on a hotel bed.